for sponsoring this. Without any further ado, it is 9:30, 12:30 New York time, and Rabbi Leibowitz is always on time and always finishes on time, which is unbelievable. It's a lesson to, certainly to me. Okay, Rabbi Leibowitz.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Rabbi Maskin. It's so great to be back with you all again. I just want to, again, express my hakaras hatov to all of you for coming to join and learn with me. I do have the great zechus of preparing and saying a lot of shiurim, but this one is the most fun to prepare. I love this topic to discuss, not only because I get to join in Torah with friends from across the country, but this the topic of Rav Moshe Feinstein and his halachic adversaries is one that to me is so fascinating and so enjoyable to look into. So this week I would like to discuss Rav Teitz Zichrono Livracha, the Rav of Elizabeth, New Jersey. And there was one major machlokas between Rav Teitz and Rav Moshe that really continues until this day and really relates very much to how we celebrate our smachot and what the caterers allow us to bring to our smachot, because that is the topic of blended whiskey or whiskey, scotch and sherry casks, that's aged in sherry casks. This was a major point of machlokes between Rav Teitz and Rav Moshe. But before we get to that, let's talk about who Rav Teitz was. Rav Teitz is a Zichrono Livracha, and I thank my friend Rabbi Binyamin Blau, who is a grandson of Rav Teitz. I spoke to last night and helped fill me in on many of the details of Rav Teitz's life. Rav Teitz was an innovative leader of the Jewish community of Elizabeth, New Jersey, for many decades. My grandmother was the mikvah lady in Elizabeth, New Jersey. She, to her, Rav Teitz was a Malach Hashem Tzavakos. He was someone maybe I get emotional about this because of my own family connection. My grandmother was a young almana. My grandfather passed away very young with three little children. She spoke a broken English, and Rav Teitz employed her as the cook in JEC. And I remember when my uncle, Zichrono Livracha, passed away, when Rav Lazar Meir Teitz came to be Menachem Avel, it was the greatest nechama she could ever have, because she had such reverence, as much of the Elizabeth community did, for Rav Teitz, for Rav Pinchas Teitz, Zichrono Livracha, and by extension, for her son, Rav Lazar Meir Teitz, Shlita, who should continue to live and be well in good health. And Rav Teitz, one of the more unique elements about him is that he was a real pioneer in using modern technology to teach Torah. It was pre-internet. Rav Teitz died in 1995, so this was pre-internet, and he gave a Daf HaShavua Shir in Yiddish on the radio. So if you think to yourself, who on earth is going to listen to a Yiddish shir on the radio? I don't know, but 250,000 people. That's the answer. 250,000 people listen to the Yiddish shir on the radio. I had the great privilege of attending Rav Teitz's Levaya in Eretz Yisrael, because I happened to have been learning in Yeshivat Keren Biavne in 1995, and I remember Rav Elazar Meir Teitz, Shlita, being maspid, his father, said, look, we have no way of measuring the quality of Divrei Torah. I don't know qualitatively if my father was the greatest Marbitz Torah in the world, but one thing I can tell you, quantitatively, for sure, he was the greatest Marbitz Torah in the world. To have an audience of 250,000 people, many of whom, by the way, were not even Shomer Shabbos, but it just brought them back to hear a shir in Yiddish over the radio, and they would sit and they would listen to the shir in Yiddish over the radio. An unbelievable activist also for Russian Jewry. He worked very hard to be able to bring things into Russia. Chefetz Mitzvah. He had relationships with the government that enabled him to take dozens of trips into Russia. And on that level, he worked very closely with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zichrono Livracha. Rabbi Blau told me that on Rabbi Teitz's desk, he had a picture of the Lubavitcher Rebbe among other Gedolei Torah. He had a very close connection, because if you were working in Russia in those days, you were working with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Of course, there were a very great many Lubavitcher Hasidim in Russia that the Rebbe didn't have direct access to, and he would take advantage of Rabbi Teitz going. In fact, if you go on one of the Chabad websites, they tell this remarkable story about a special edition of Tanya that the Lubavitcher Rebbe sent with Rav Teitz to bring into Russia. I asked Rabbi Blau if the story is true. He said probably not, but it's based on a true story. And he said Rabbi Blau told me that these kinds of things drives his mother a little crazy. crazy because Rabbi Teitz's daughter, Rebbetzin Blau, wrote the most unbelievable biography of Rabbi Teitz called Learn Torah, Love Torah, Live Torah. So even if you don't read the book, the title is worth everything. Learn Torah, Love Torah, Live Torah. That's the title of the biography of Rav Teitz. You've done something right in your life if that's what they call your biography. So Rebbetzin Blau is very, Dr. Blau is very particular, obviously, that the facts be shared properly. Rav Teitz was a world-class speaker. You can hear his shiurim online. You go on YU Torah, they have a number of his shiurim. I listened to the hesped that he gave for Rav Moshe. It's in Yiddish. I do not speak a word of Yiddish, but it was beautiful to listen to. It was you could tell that this is an orator par excellence. Rav Teitz, in fact, met his wife because he was such a great speaker. Apparently what happened was he was speaking in Europe. He went to Telz, and Rav Yosef Leib Bloch sent him with his son, Rav Elia Meir, to raise money for Telz to the United States because he was so impressed with what a great orator he was. He figured he'd probably be a very effective fundraiser. So he said, Rabbi Teitz was single at the time, so Rav Bloch sent him with his son, with Rav Elia Meir, to the United States to just go on a speaking tour and raising money for the Telz Yeshiva, which, by the way, Rav Teitz was not an alumnus of the Telz Yeshiva. He had brothers who learned in Telz. He was not. But he went on this tour, and he became very close with Rav Elia Meir while he was on the tour. He gave his father Tkias Kaf. He shook his father's hand and told him, I'm going to come back. I'm not going to the Trefna Medina and staying there. I will come back. And while he was there, he was traveling, and he was told that there's a girl in Elizabeth that he should meet. And Rav Prail was a Telzer, and that's why Rabbi Teitz spoke in Elizabeth. And in Rav Prail's tzava'a, it said, he died very young, it said, whoever marries his daughter takes over the Rabbanus in Elizabeth. And Rabbi Teitz meets this daughter, falls in love, and now, the next thing he knows, he's the rabbi of Elizabeth. But he promised his father that he's got to come back to Europe. So they hop on a boat, they go back to Europe to get reshus from his father, and the Rebbetzin would say later on, we knew we were coming back. It was just, we took our honeymoon in Europe. But Rav Teitz said, no, I'm not coming to America until I get permission from my father. And he and Rav Elia Meir had this unbelievable relationship. They would, while they were running around the country speaking and raising money, they made a deal with each other. They would learn together for 1 hour each and every day to make sure that they don't forget to learn while they're doing their good work. One night at 2 o'clock in the morning, Rav Elia Meir Bloch wakes up Rabbi Teitz. He said, Pinchas, we forgot to learn today. We didn't learn today. From 2 in the morning till 4:30 in the morning, they talk in learning because they had forgotten. They hadn't had an opportunity earlier in that day to learn. In fact, years later, when the Telz Yeshiva wanted to put out a journal, Lekavod Rav Elia Meir, Rav Teitz sent in the Dvar Torah that they shared that night between 2 a.m. and 4:30 a.m. That's what he shared in that journal. Just to share with you a Dvar Torah from Rabbi Teitz related to yesterday's parsha that Rabbi Binyamin Blau shared with me yesterday. You know, there's a concept called Hu Haya Omer. We have the Mishnayos tell us that a particular Tana, Hu Haya Omer, he used to say. So I have a close friend who always dreamt, and maybe he'll still do it, of writing a book called Hu Haya Omer, because what the Bali Musar explain is that sometimes Hu Haya Omer means his very essence says this, meaning the Dvar Torah is such an autobiographical Dvar Torah. It's such a reflection of who he is that, you know, sometimes you'll hear a Dvar Torah from a particular person and you know, like you hear of Soloveitchik's Divrei Torah about how a Jew is supposed to be in Galus based on Yosef HaTzadik, and you think, Yosef, a Jew in Galus succeeding, building Torah? There's a Hu Haya Omer. He's describing what is really his very essence. So a Hu Haya Omer from Rabbi Teitz. Yehuda, we learned yesterday in Parshas Vayigash, had to go ahead to start a yeshiva in Mitzrayim, Rashi tells us. That's what he was there. He was sent to do, to establish a Beis Hora'ah, a place of learning Torah. But asks Rabbi Teitz, didn't Yosef prove that he was holding and learning? by sending the Agalos, he didn't have a yeshiva. He still managed. And with Menashe and Ephraim were like Shvatim, Liheim, Yaakov tells us in this coming week's Parsha. They were apparently great Talmidei Chachamim. And they did it without a yeshiva. So don't you see, you can do it without a yeshiva. A person can succeed in Torah and Yir Shemayim without a yeshiva. Says Rabbi Teitz, only Yechidei Segula can do that. That is not for the masses. That is for very special, particular individuals. But what Yaakov understood and what Yehuda understood and what Yosef understood was that for the masses, for a community, you need to have a yeshiva. Without a yeshiva, without a makom Torah, a community cannot thrive. And that's, I believe, very autobiographical. That is a Hu Haya Omer. Rabbi Teitz realized that, and he built a yeshiva. This is pre-Torah Umasora. It's before that fateful meeting when Mr. Mendelovich called in Dr. Joe Kamenetsky and Rabbi Sender Gross and Rabbi Goldenberg and said, boys, we lost 1.5 million 1.5 million children in the Holocaust. You guys are going to bring back 1.5 million children to Jewish education. This was before that meeting, and Rabbi Teitz built the JEC in a Elizabeth, New Jersey. In fact, later on, he was used by Torah Masorah. When they wanted to start day schools throughout the country, they would often fly him in to give the know-how and the inspiration for people to do these things. That's why he had such a close relationship with all of those three Rabbanim, those Talmidim of Mr. Mendelovich that I just mentioned 2 minutes ago. There was once and Rav Teitz was connected with really all of the Gedolei Torah of that generation. He was a Slobodka Talmud, so he was very close with Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, with Rabbi Yitzhak Ruderman, with all of those who learned in Slabatka. In fact, Rabbi Blau told me that there was once a machlokas in Slabatka Yeshiva, which is, you know, if you're familiar with a little bit of Litvisha history, that was pretty much par for the course. That when there were often machlokas in Yeshiva, and that was part of what gave it a little bit of life and made life interesting. But Rav Ruderman and Rav Teitz were on opposite sides of that machlokas. But Rav Ruderman had a daughter. He only had one daughter, Rebbetzin Weinberg, married Rav Yaakov Weinberg, Zichrono Livracha, the Rashiva of Ner Yisrael. Rav Ruderman's daughter was very ill, and she needed help from a particular doctor that Rav Teitz managed to forge a connection with. And Rav Teitz, even though they were on different sides of the Machlokas, a Jewish neshama is a Jewish neshama, and he went and he made the connection, and he essentially saved Rav Ruderman's daughter's life. And as a result of that, every year for the rest of his life, on Erev Rosh Hashanah, Rav Teitz received a call from Rav Ruderman to wish him a good yar and to say thank you again for having saved his daughter's life. And wow, what a life that was. She ended up marrying the Rosh Yeshiva, the one who would become the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael, and was a really spectacular person. Rabbi Teitz always spoke about building. He knew how to think like an American. One of the things I remember of his son mentioned at his Levaya was that while all of his contemporaries were only speaking in Yiddish, Rabbi Teitz taught himself to speak English. It was very important that he connect with Americans on their level, that he can think like an American, he can talk like an American, and that was very important to him. Rabbi Blau said that once when Rabbi Teitz was was by his daughter for a Shabbos in Boston, they enjoyed a meal together with Rav Soloveitchik, and they couldn't get over how Rabbi Teitz and Rav Soloveitchik kept on talking about how proud they were that they met payroll every single month in their respective yeshivas. Like, that's what they're going to talk about? That's what they're so excited about, that they met the payroll? And Rabbi Blau said, until I got involved in communal work and actually working in yeshiva, then I realized what a big deal that actually is to be able to make payroll every single week. Rabbi Teitz had a very special relationship with Rav Moshe Feinstein, and that's what we're supposed to focus on this morning. They probably did not know each other from Europe. Rav Moshe was sort of removed from the yeshiva world. He had more of a private education. But, you know, Rabbi Teitz was connected with Rav Huttner, Rav Yaakov, Rav Ruderman, the Slobodka Talmidim. But a lot of the Lower East Side ended up moving to Elizabeth, so much of the Feinstein family moved to Elizabeth, so that connection was was forged over there, as well as through all the work, through the Aguda and Torah Mesorah. Rav Michal Feinstein, Rav Moshe's nephew, and Rabbi Teitz were extremely close. In fact, when Rabbi Teitz's son, Rabbi Lozer Meir Teitz, went to learn in the Panovich Yeshiva for 3 years, yes, he was learning by Rav Shmuel Rozovsky, by Gedolei Torah in Panovich, but a Chavrusa every day with Rav Michal Feinstein for 3 years, because of the relationship that Rav Michal Feinstein had with Rabbi Teitz. But again, it was a real connection between Rav Moshe and Rabbi Teitz. If you listen to the Hasbid, I didn't make out much of the Hasbid, because again, I don't speak Yiddish, but based on the Mamari Chazal he was quoting, and the very little bit of Yiddish that that my grandmother drilled into me, I was able to understand the following idea that I thought was such a beautiful concept that Rabbi Teitz described Rav Moshe with. Rabbi Teitz pointed out the Gemara Maseches Brachos tells us, Ein lo laKadosh Baruch Hu ela dal ramu shel halacha bilvad. Hashem only has in this world, now that we don't have a Beis Hamikdash, the four amos of halacha. So Rabbi Teitz asked, I don't understand. Doesn't Hashem fill the entire world? Doesn't halacha relate to the entire world? Why only four amos? Why would you even use that terminology? Four amos of halacha? So Rabbi Teitz said there's something, he gave two answers, but I'm going to share one of them. There's something about four amos. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Baba Basra that if a person has a yard that's shared with a neighbor, that's eight amos, then you can divide it, because each one will have a kedei chaluka, each one will have a reasonable portion. But if the yard would when split, would yield less than four amos for each neighbor, well then it's not worth anything. Then you cannot force the neighbor to split it. No one has to settle for land that's less than four amos. And the lashon that Chazal uses, yesh bo din chaluka or ein bo din chaluka. Four amos is something that cannot be divided. It has to be kept intact. Ein bo din chaluka, says Rabbi Teitz. When it comes to halacha, it's ein bo din chaluka. A person has to be a master of all of halacha to be able to pask in the most serious shaylas on any part of halacha. You cannot subdivide halacha and say, oh, I'm only an expert in this area, but I'm totally unfamiliar with another area. And he said that was part of the godless of Rav Moshe, that the Gemara says, Ezu tam l'chacham arayi li'monos parnis al tzibur kol sheshol in halacha b'chol makom va'onelo. You can ask him a halacha anywhere, about anything, and he'll be able to answer. And that's what Rabbi Teitz said about Rav Moshe. There is one story that I hesitate to share because if you don't know the nature of Litvisha Gedolim, then it may be off-putting with our American sensibilities, but it's such a remarkable story, I have to share it. So if it at all rubs you the wrong way, forget I ever said it. And I don't know 100% that this is true, but this is the way the story goes. Apparently, Rav Moshe and Rabbi Teitz were in some sort of machlokas at some point. Now, they always went to each other's smachos anytime either one of them married off a child, the bar mitzvah, anything. They would always, of course, attend each other's smachos, and one time they were in a machlokas when one of Rabbi Teitz's children was supposed to get married. And Rabbi Teitz did not invite Rav Moshe to the wedding because they were embroiled in this machlokas. And Rav Moshe came anyway. Rav Moshe came to the wedding and he walked right over to Rabbi Teitz and he said, I know you didn't invite me, but I also know that we're very good friends. And in 3 months from now, when we're getting along just fine, you're going to feel terribly that I wasn't invited to this wedding. And Rabbi Teitz was so happy that Rav Moshe made that decision, Rav Moshe came. But not only that, Rav Soloveitchik was supposed to be the Masada Kiddushin. But Rav Soloveitchik had a practice that if Rav Moshe Feinstein was in attendance, he would not be Masada Kiddushin. He yielded to Rav Moshe. So Rav Soloveitchik saw Rav Moshe was there, and he said, I cannot be Masada Kiddushin. Rav Moshe is the Masada Kiddushin. And with that, Rav Moshe went from being uninvited to being the Masada Kiddushin at that wedding. So that's the little bit about the relationship between Rav Teitz and Rav Moshe. There aren't that many tshuvas in Igros Moshe that were written to Rav Teitz, but in Chelek Aleph of Yaradeya, which is what we're going to talk about for the last 10 minutes today, there are several tshuvas in a row all about the blended whiskey shaila. There's also another very famous tshuva from Rav Moshe to Rav Teitz, and that was about having for a blind man to have a seeing eye dog in shul. That tshuva that Rav Moshe wrote that allowed a blind person to bring a seeing eye dog into shul, that was written to Rav Teitz. Mistama, that must have been a case that came up in Elizabeth, and Rav Teitz asked Rav Moshe the Shaila. There are two other tshuvas in Chelek Choshen Mishpat that are written to Rav Teitz, and Choshen Mishpat Chelek Aleph Simen Yud Beis. Rav Teitz had some sort of question or comment on something Rav Moshe had written in the Dibros Moshe, So that's more just talking and learning on the sugya of kasher zamam. So that's another tshuva. And choshem mishpacha lekalv simanayin vav. There was a case where they had to fire, where someone fired a malamed from his position without a taina, without any claim that he had done anything wrong. And there was a whole din Torah about it, whether the school or whoever had employed him had to pay him money, had to pay him severance. And Rav Teitz turned to Rav Moshe for an explanation as to why the school was in fact responsible. And Rav Moshe writes in that tshuva, we had a yeshiva's Beis Din, this was our decision. Rabbi Teitz, you are every bit as capable as I am of providing the logic for our yeshiva's Beis Din, but because we're such good friends, I'll tell you my logic anyway. I'll write it up for you, even though I know you could do this on your own. And Rav Moshe proceeded to write about why it is that he paskined the way he did, or that the Beis Din paskined. He writes, L'rav chadimilsa, ani kosef hatam bekitzer, just because I'm going to write the answer. Those are the only tshuvas I could find that were written to Rav Teitz. But anyway, to our issue for these last 10 minutes, blended whiskey. So this was an issue that Rav Teitz originally was a concern that people had largely ignored. Everyone was drinking whatever whiskey was on the market. No one was really interested in even to today. It's very difficult to find anything with an actual hashkacha on it, any scotch or whiskey that has an actual hashkacha on it. There are very few of them, and certainly in those days it was unheard of. And Rav Teitz held that whiskey needed a hashkacha, and he actually gave a hashkacha on blended whiskey. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Kuf Yodalid in Yaradeya Se'iv Vav, Tzarech lizayr v'livdok v'lachkor b'sheichor b'mashke shal dvash sha'osim ha'ovdei k'chav machshav im nosim hem shvarim shal yayin. That one has to be very careful to make sure that there is no wine added into any other drink that you may buy. And if there is any wine added in, you need to make sure that the ratio of the beverage to the wine that's added in is 60 to 1. You need shishim in order to be mevatelit. And not only that, if it's avidi l'tayma, if the wine is added in to provide some flavor, then afilu be'elef, it's not going to be batel. It doesn't matter what the ratio is, it will not be batel. Wine and grape juice that are not specially prepared are rabbinically not kosher. We paskin that it's nisir midrabanan. Pure whiskey and grain alcohol beverages, if they're pure, are kosher. However, American law, Rav Teitz noted, permits including blenders from other ingredients. That's up to 2.5% of the drink, and that's way more than shishin. That's more than 1/60. And the blenders can include even things that have an animal origin, like glycerin, that may come from animal products, and often non-kosher wine as well. So Rav Teitz published a tshuva in Hapardes in the year 5710, where he credits Rav Lazer Silver, with whom Rav Teitz was also extremely close with. He credits Rav Lazer Silver, the chief rabbi of America and Canada, as Rav Silver was would refer to himself. Rav Lazer Silver was the Adam Gadol Ad Ma'od, and he and Rav Teitz credits him with discovering this problem. Later on, Dayan Weiss from the Edech Haredus in his Minchas Yitzchak Chelu Beis Simon Chavches pointed out that there's a similar issue, not just with the blended whiskey, which is what Rav Teitz's concern was, but even with single malt scotch, which is often aged in casks used previously for sherry, and they often advertise that. And he raised that issue. Do we have to be concerned about that as well? Rav Teitz was very machmir about this issue, based on the idea that there is nesinas tam, that some of the taste, the flavor of that wine is entering this beverage. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Yaradeya, Simon Kuf Lamed Hey, that a kli that once had non-kosher wine, which is much more common nowadays than actual blenders being added in, than an actual blend being added into the drink, you have to get rid of that. The Shulchan Aruch talks about getting rid of the tam from the kli, and in Simon Kuf Lamed Zayin, the Shulchan Aruch says if you put kosher wine in such kelim, in such vessels, it is asr, but other drinks like beer would be mutter because we assume the sherry cask is nosin tam lefgam. It gives a negative taste, a negative flavor to whatever beverage you're putting in that barrel. However, nowadays, they advertise it. They charge more money for it. It's very hard to say that it's no Saint Tam Lefgam. So some suggest that, no, it's only the aroma of the wine, not the flavor of the wine that that they're advertising that gets into the whiskey. Others suggest that, no, it simply neutralizes the negative taste of the barrel, but the wine does not actually add any flavor. Rav Teitz, however, didn't really directly address the sherry casks. He was more concerned about the actual blend. So Rav Moshe, for his part, Rav Moshe disagreed entirely. Rav Moshe, in several tshuvas, you could tell from the tshuvas that going back and forth, that Rabbi Teitz kept on begging him to be machmir, and Rav Moshe refused to budge. He was absolutely makel on this issue. Why? So first of all, Rav Moshe describes why it's important. He said he held that whiskey does not require hashgacha. He thought it was important to substantiate the kula because rabbis and very religious laymen would drink such whiskey on a regular basis. Rav Moshe wrote that he personally would try to avoid it, except, unbelievable, Rav Moshe writes, Av shani matir, even though I hold it's mutter, nizrani ba'atzmi milishto. So Rav Moshe says, I won't drink it, blended, rak b'chabura shelo lemechzikiyuara. Rav Moshe says, unless I'm hanging out with friends. I don't know who Rav Moshe hung out with and what that looked like, but I would imagine, like at a wedding or something like that, where he doesn't want, it shouldn't be mechzikiyuara. It shouldn't look like I'm being arrogant, that I'm more religious than anybody else. You're Rav Moshe Feinstein. You can be a little more religious than everybody else. I think no one would have a problem with that. No, Rav Moshe was very sensitive to this, that he shouldn't look he shouldn't look arrogant in the way he practiced religion, and therefore, since Mikra Dinu was mutter, he would always take a shot. He would order a shot of blended whiskey if he was at a chasana. Even though, generally speaking, in his own private home, he wouldn't drink it because it was a special chumrah that he accepted upon himself. Rav Moshe praised Rav Teitz's hashkacha to give those who wanted the opportunity to be extra machmir to do so. Rav Moshe thought that that was very good. But what was Rav Moshe's kula based on? How could you be lenient? It's a pretty compelling argument that if they're adding in things that you don't know the origins of these other ingredients, and it may be yayin, it may be stam yenam, which is usur, wine that comes from non-Jews, is usur for a Jewish person. It's absolutely forbidden. How could you say that it's okay? The flavor is there. It's in the whiskey. That's why they add it. So how could Rav Moshe be makel? Rav Moshe bases his leniency on the fact that the Shach in Yoredeya, Simen Kuf Yudalid, paskins that Stam Yenam is only Durabana nowadays. So even if some of the whiskey is not blended with wine in the country, there are some whiskeys that are pure, you can assume that it's a Suffolk Durabanan. You don't know if there's any wine really in this whiskey. So that's one point. And more importantly, Rav Moshe held, the Shulchan Aruch writes in Simen Kuf Lamed Dalet, Sifhei, that non-kosher wine does not require Shishim to become Batel. It only requires Shisha. You don't need a 60-to-1 ratio. All you need is a 6-to-1 ratio. And Rav Moshe explained that the reason you only need a 6-to-1 ratio with wine is because the assumption is that that the flavor of wine dissipates more easily than other flavors. And therefore, a 6-to-1 ratio is enough, even though this does seem to be the subject of some machlokas. The Rama in Simen Kuf Chaf Gimel seems to argue and hold that wine does require shishim, but many of the poskim, many of the poskim, the Magen Avram and the Pri Chadosh and the Maksa Shekel, all seem to assume that that this is true, that a 6-to-1 ratio is enough. Now there is a further discussion in poskim whether this leniency of a 6-to-1 ratio is only when you mix wine with water or even when you mix wine with other beverages. Rav Moshe held even when you mix it with other beverages, it would be good enough, and we can rely on the bittul in shisha without shishim. Just parenthetically to point out that Mori V'Rabbi Rav Shechter Shlita in his Sefer Be'ikvei Atzon on page Mem Aleph argues that if you accept the argument of Rav Chaim V'Lashner and the argument of the Kozhik Lover Gon, Rav Aryeh Tzvi Frumer, that schnapps is a meichel and not a mashke, that it's a food and not a drink, then it would turn out that you need shishim. Because while wine becomes batel b'shisha when mixed with a beverage, it requires shishim when mixed with a food. There is such a shita that when it comes to any drink, that what determines what's a beverage, what's a food, is not whether it's liquid or solid, but whether it's something that you drink to quench a thirst. No one says, oh, I'm so thirsty, it's such a hot day outside, quick, give me some whiskey. If you do say that, then you probably have a problem, meaning that is not something that a person would normally say to quench a thirst. And therefore, it may have a din of a meichel, not of a mashke, but that's beside the point. There are obviously many, many more details. Let me just note one thing in closing. The standard hashkachos for the Orthodox community, the OU and the CRC and the Star K, most of the standard hashkachos, certainly the OU, I actually should not speak for the others because I didn't verify that the others hold this way as well, but the OU does require verification that liquors do not contain non-kosher ingredients, and therefore it seems that in the long run, we ended up paskening like Rav Teitz on this and not like Rav Moshe, at least as far as when it comes to making public smachot. What people do in their own home and what they drink, many probably do rely on Rav Moshe, but there are lists that are produced where people are much more limited in terms of what one can serve at a simcha, largely like Rav Teitz. Rav Moshe's idea of relying on a suffix is very questionable because it's no longer a suffix. It's very easy to find out the information. All the major distillers will share with you their information, and you can find out whether they blend their whiskey with anything else. So that is why the OU, among others, are a little bit more machmer on this issue, much more aligned with Rabbi Teitz. I thank you again for the opportunity to share Torah with you this morning, and wish everyone a wonderful day, wonderful week, and Be'ez Hashem, a wonderful month. I guess I'll see you next month, everybody.
Thank you so much. Have a lovely, lovely day. Thank